everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2022, and this is episode 303, which is a conversation about the Paramount Plus television series, Star Trek, Strange New Worlds. Today's guest is Cole Burgett, who is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. Cole teaches classes in theology and Bible exposition and writes extensively about theology and pop culture. Cole has written an online exclusive television series review for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, and the New Old-Fashioned Way. You can read his web exclusive review at our website, equip.org, if you are a subscriber. Now, if you do not already subscribe, please go to our website, equip.org, to subscribe for $33.50, because all of our subscribers not only get the print editions of the magazine straight to their door, but they also get the online access to all of the exclusive reviews and articles. So you don't want to miss those. To get them, again, please subscribe at equip.org. Cole, it's good to have you on again.
Always good to be here.
Gene Roddenberry was the creator of Star Trek. He was raised as a Southern Baptist, but as an adult, he rejected religion and considered himself a humanist. And it seems that the worldview of Star Trek is very much a product of his humanism. Now, of course, the original Star Trek series, starring William Shatner, ran for three seasons from 1966 to 1969, and it has generated nine spin-off television series, as well as a couple of feature film series. So Star Trek literally spawned a whole franchise of fandom, with the first Star Trek convention starting in 1972, and now in 2022, the 56th Star Trek convention was held in Las Vegas last week. So I'd like you to tell a little bit about the series creator, Gene Roddenberry, and let our listeners know about his views and what is the legacy of the original Star Trek series. Of course, he had a complicated relationship with religion, as I noted. And how has that influenced not only the original Star Trek series, but later on one of the series called The Next Generation?
Sure. So to start off pretty quickly, the general consensus, if you're asking the average person, is usually that Gene Roddenberry is a staunch atheist. But it's a bit of a misnomer to say that Roddenberry was an atheist. It isn't quite accurate as far as I can tell. And even people who knew him, especially in the later years of his life, said that he was a far cry from an atheist. If anything, he was more along the lines of an agnostic. As you mentioned, he was raised as a Southern Baptist, actually, and won an award from the American Baptist Convention because he used to write these very Christian ideas into a lot of scripts in his early career. But he later went on to call himself a complete pagan and someone who was very critical of organized religion, especially Christianity. He once called religion a malfunctioning substitute brain, and he had this idea that would eventually permeate his vision of the future in Star Trek, that modern religions would dissipate by the 22nd or the 23rd century. In other words, people would just give up on religion. Now, we have to understand that this was a fairly common idea in the 19th and 20th centuries among scientists and intellectuals, the idea that religion is bad for people, so it needs to be done away with. And Christians will sometimes get all offended because they think they're being singled out, when really these notions target anyone of faith anywhere. This is the age of the Enlightenment, when rationalism and empiricism rule and skepticism is rewarded and the scientific method holds the answers to the secrets of the universe. Roddenberry bought into this. In a sense, he was a true believer in that ideology. He was a humanist through and through, and Star Trek, which is as much his legacy as anything else, it embodied that. In fact, he demanded that Star Trek embody that. He forbade the writers from mentioning religion because, in his view, there would be no religion in the future. Nicholas Meyer, the director of the sixth film, The Undiscovered Country, once said that Star Trek had more or less evolved into a secular parallel to the Catholic Mass. And it's not that Roddenberry was outright dismissive of religious experience. He actually said once something to the effect of, "I reject religion but accept the notion of God," which is a bit odd to hear. I think the man probably believed that something like a divine being could eventually be explained scientifically, that man could eventually comprehend and perhaps even create a being like that artificially, which sort of becomes a plot in an early Star Trek episode called The Return of the Archons, which has this supercomputer venerated as a deity that Kirk ends up convincing to commit suicide in order to give its followers free will. There's also another episode which features the crew of the Enterprise encountering these alien entities who were basically the gods and goddesses of Greek mythology. The Next Generation has this entity known as Q, who recently figured heavily back into the most recent season of Picard, and Q is this sort of trickster god who desires to put humanity on trial. And later episodes of Star Trek explored that notion as well. There's actually an episode of Strange New Worlds even called The Elysian Kingdom that really digs into this idea of an entity in the depths of space that for all intents and purposes could be seen as a kind of divine being with the power of transfiguration. So it's a bit of a misnomer to say that Roddenberry and Star Trek never touched the topic of faith or the notion of God. However, it was always done in the context of humanist philosophy. And a lot of the original series and the earlier years of The Next Generation, especially when Roddenberry was still involved, were really driven by that philosophy.
So I want to know if you think that Christians should watch this series. I mean, it is pretty evident if you've watched any Star Trek at all, just the humanism to me comes through. You know, we just all need to be better and we can do this through negotiation and not violence and those kinds of things. So is it possible to jump into Star Trek with absolutely no previous exposure to any of the series?
It would depend on the series that you're trying to jump into. I think one of the things you have to understand is that in The Next Generation, the show really comes out from under Roddenberry and his ideas, and the storytelling begins to reflect that. One of the sort of the legendary stories goes that Roddenberry never wanted any conflict between crew members on the Enterprise because his idea of the future would be that humanity would grow beyond petty squabbles. And it really became an issue for the writers who basically had to tell him, look, you can't have good stories without conflict. Conflict is central to every story. Storytelling sort of builds itself on conflict. And it became a great point of tension between Roddenberry and some of the other writers on the later series. But the series eventually comes out from under Roddenberry's ideas, but it's still sort of driven by this optimistic view of humanity, especially going into the future, that humanity is always going to get better thanks to progress. And like you said, it's pretty evident to anybody who watches it. As far as can a Christian approach this material, yeah, I think it's easy to approach. I think it's actually quite easy to interact with on a philosophical level because the show is interested in doing that. The series, the different series are interested in getting philosophical at different points in time. And I think in a lot of ways, it sort of invites the discussion more so than a lot of other shows do. Beyond that, and anybody who has watched some of the older series understands that, you know, Star Trek can be campy at times, but it's also a fairly clean series compared to a lot of other stuff on television. So I definitely think it's accessible. I wouldn't really recommend anybody jumping into a series sort of in the middle of it. And if you're not really into science fiction or, I guess, more cerebral science fiction, then it's probably not for you. It's not really like Star Wars in that sense. It's a little more heady and a lot of dialogue and talking and competing viewpoints and philosophies back and forth, stuff like that. So Star Trek is definitely an acquired taste, I think. But over time, I think it's some of the most compelling television that you can view.
So today we're talking about the series Star Trek Strange New World. So can you give us the basic setup of that series? And how does this particular series fit into the broader context of Star Trek? And of course, with any of our discussions about television series, I just want to put the warning of there will be plenty of spoilers. but this is easily to watch on Paramount Plus, which has a very affordable monthly fee for anybody interested in watching Star Trek.
Sure. So Strange New Worlds is a prequel to the original 1966 series. And it's also a sequel to the second season of the more recent series, Discovery. And as we get into this, some people might be wondering, wait a minute, why does the Enterprise have a different captain? Wasn't Kirk the original? Well, that depends entirely on what you mean by original. In Gene Roddenberry's very original pitch for the series, the Enterprise was called the Yorktown, and the captain was someone named Robert April, who actually appears in Strange New Worlds. But if you go back to 1964, there was an original pilot episode that had been shot titled The Cage. And for that pilot episode, the name of the Yorktown had been changed to the Enterprise, but its captain was a character named Christopher Pike, played by Jeffrey Hunter, the classic actor who appeared in the Western The Searchers, and who also played Jesus in the 1961 biblical epic King of Kings. The Cage also featured Majel Barrett, who would later marry Gene Roddenberry, as the ship's first mate, simply known as Number One, and Leonard Nimoy as Spock. That was the original Enterprise crew. But CBS rejected The Cage because it was too cerebral. It was too philosophical for their taste. They thought people wouldn't get it. And so the pilot was canned. CBS then asked Roddenberry to produce another pilot for Star Trek, this one titled Where No Man Has Gone Before, and Jeffrey Hunter withdrew from the role of Pike. Things were rewritten, and we got the cast we all know and love with James Kirk as captain. Now, The Cage remained unaired for decades. It was not seen by general audiences until 1986, I think it was. But one of the ways the original series salvaged the footage when it was airing in the 60s, was to do a major two-part episode called The Menagerie, which contained a lot of flashback footage to The Cage. And in The Menagerie, the story goes that Pike, in the years since his time as captain of the Enterprise, became very horrendously injured, and Spock more or less goes rogue in an effort to help Pike one last time. And so Pike was more or less written out of the series before being written back in. Why is any of that important? Well, in 2019, the second season of Star Trek Discovery aired, and that show is a prequel to the original series set before Captain Kirk took over the Enterprise, so it's set during Pike's captaincy. And in the second season, Pike was reimagined, played by Anson Mount, who had just come off a very successful Western television series called Hell on Wheels. Apart from that, Number One was also recast to be played by Rebecca Romijn, whom you might recognize as Mystique from the original X-Men film trilogy. And Spock was also recast and was now played by Ethan Peck. And the events of Discovery took place after The Cage, that unaired pilot, but before The Menagerie. And I know that can be pretty confusing to a lot of newcomers. There's a lot of history here, but the shows do actually a good job of making it fairly accessible. You can just start with Strange New Worlds and you're really not missing a ton of information. But the second season of Discovery received extremely positive reception. People absolutely loved Mount's portrayal of Pike, as well as the casting decisions for Spock and Number One. And pretty much used social media to lobby for an entirely new series set aboard the original Enterprise with this reimagined original crew from the very first pilot episode of Star Trek. And it worked. And that's what Strange New Worlds is. It's every bit a throwback to the original Star Trek series. It is episodic in its storytelling, meaning it's much more in line with the Planet of the Week style stories of the older series and not heavily serialized. There is a sense in which, had CBS not rejected The Cage, this show is in some ways what the original series might have been. And that is how Strange New Worlds fits into the broader Star Trek context. It's a prequel to the original series and a sequel to both the unaired pilot, The Cage, and the first two seasons of Star Trek Discovery.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. We would be super grateful if you could do all of those various things that we ask you to consider doing. That is, of course, primarily to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal at equip.org, but really getting the word out about this free podcast, tell a friend verbally, email a favorite episode, put a favorite episode up on your social media pages if you have those, and we would be so grateful because that allows other people who are looking for this kind of content to find it. And of course, the best way that you can help us out is just taking some of your time to give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. And anybody that is giving us a written review after July 1st of this year will be entered into a contest for a bunch of swag at the end of the year. But you can also help us out by giving us a tip, something like $3, $5, $10. All of that helps us bring you this free podcast every week. You can do that by going to our website, equip.org. It's got a whole new look. Click on Journal and you will see Postmodern Realities Podcast there. Click on that and you will find all of our recent broadcasts, and any one of those landing pages will have a link to give us a tip. And thank you for the many ways in which you support and partner with the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Well, this particular series, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, has become quite popular with fans, and you know, critics are enjoying it as well. So why do you think this Star Trek series has received such a positive reception?
Yeah, the show has done amazingly well. It broke records as the most watched debut of any Star Trek series to air on Paramount Plus, beating out both Discovery and Picard, as well as the other animated series. It has the highest Rotten Tomatoes score, if you care about that kind of thing, of any Star Trek property ever. It's sitting at 99%, which is basically unheard of. Usually you see those kinds of scores for individual episodes, not an entire season or a series. But the show has really good critical ratings, and audiences love it as well. I think part of that is due to the fact that this is a show that audiences wanted and lobbied for. And you really see the power of social media here. This is one of the rare cases in which you can actually advocate for social media use paying off. 10, 15 years ago even, creators couldn't get this kind of gut-level feedback from audiences. But now with Twitter especially, the results are in pretty much instantaneously. And people really raved about the new characters in Discovery's second season and more or less told the creators, hey, we want to see a show that follows these guys. And Kurtzman and Goldsman and the people at CBS, to their credit, had the strengths of ego to listen and have ended up producing what is critically the best show Star Trek has ever made. In fact, it's really obvious now that CBS is pushing Strange New Worlds as their flagship series. Used to, it was Discovery. But this show has really sort of come into its own and taken over. And the show's success is not just due to the fact that the creators listen to the audience, but it has everything to do with the fact that it's just good television. I remember when you started watching it for this review, you sent me a message and said something like you were surprised at how thoughtful it was. And, you know, Star Trek has been the epitome of campy at times, especially that original series. It has been comically bad at different turns. But when Star Trek is good, it's really, really hard to beat in terms of just quality storytelling. And it's clean, as I mentioned before. There really is no nudity in Star Trek, and the language is usually really clean. I think Discovery bends that a bit, but it's not extremely vulgar at all. Star Trek is not a dirty show. And when you get episodes like The City on the Edge of Forever and Balance of Terror in the original series, or Yesterday's Enterprise and The Measure of a Man and The Next Generation, those are episodes that win awards. Those are episodes that show you what the genre of science fiction can really do. It's challenging, it's interesting, it's philosophical storytelling. And Strange New Worlds, almost every episode of the first season channels that in some way. The real value of doing this episodic storytelling is that you can play with tone. Every episode can be wildly different tonally. So to unpack this for just a minute, for me, tone is like the holy grail of filmmaking. The ability to maintain a consistent tone and keep the audience in that zone of whatever you want them to feel in that moment. That's a really tough thing to do. when you have these heavily serialized dramas that are all the rage, which really started with the early aughts award-winning dramas like 24 and Lost and the prestige dramas like The Sopranos and continues today with shows like Game of Thrones. And it also influenced the return of Star Trek with Discovery. These kinds of heavily serialized shows have to maintain a consistent tone week to week, episode to episode. But with episodic storytelling, each episode can be very different from the last. And you see this with Strange New Worlds. One episode is basically an homage to Alien. It's straight up horror. Another episode is laugh out loud comedy. One is a political thriller. Another is an action adventure piece. You're afforded the ability to really experiment with tone. And what that does is allow room for viewers of every stripe. In other words, there's something for everyone. And the unpredictability of the storytelling makes things exciting again. I can't think of the last time television was really exciting to watch. You didn't really know what the next episode could bring. The X-Files was the last show to really experiment heavily with tone, and it resulted in some of the best writers and showrunners of the 21st century. It's just an older way of storytelling that I think is really creatively compelling. It gives different writers room to experiment with how stories are told, and that makes it unpredictable in the best sense of the word. It just makes television exciting again, and I think that has contributed to its success in no small part.
Well, I totally agree with what you were saying about the episodes of this particular series. I was expecting trying to watch some of it to be a slog. And then towards the end of many of the episodes, all of a sudden there was just a very thoughtful, philosophical moment or kind of discussion with Pike and some of the other characters. And it always, you know, I was like, wow, there's a lot of food for thought here for the Christian and particularly the Christian apologist, because we've talked a lot on this podcast with you about the power of story and how good stories will help us talk about the story. And so in your review for this series and your previous article that you wrote for us on Captain Pike for people who are newer to the podcast, that's available for free at our website, equip.org, if you want to read his article, as well as go back to the podcast we did about the character. You talk a lot about parallels between Captain Pike and Jesus in the Bible. And so what do you find particularly compelling about Pike's characterization in the series? And, you know, what value does it hold for Christians? Because I would say usually in sci-fi fantasy type of series, you don't have the depth of character that you're finding in Pike and his exploration. You know, in the first article that you did first, we talked about how he sees the future and his death. And there's notes of this in this series too. And it's very thoughtful. It's just not there just to move the story, but really to make you think about some of the issues about determinism or predestination or different things like that.
Yeah, so in order to really talk about this, we're going to have to spoil some things. In the second season of Star Trek Discovery, again, this is set after the Cage, Pike has to make a choice. He goes to find this thing called a time crystal, and when he encounters it, he is given a vision of a potential future, and that is the future of the disfigured man that we see in the menagerie. He basically learns that if he takes the time crystal to save the lives of millions, if not billions, and prevent a war, he dooms himself to this very dark fate that some would say is a fate worse than death, because he can't do anything. He can't function. He is conscious and aware of his state, but is robbed of his body, pretty much. He's just a shell with a brain. And the episode this occurs in is titled Through the Valley of Shadows, which is straight out of Psalm 23. And in that moment, Pike makes the decision to prevent a war and save the lives of so many at the expense of his own. It's a brilliant, brilliant storytelling decision, and it takes this classic character, who is really just a minor player in the original series, and gives him this really tremendous and beautiful redemption arc, where he goes from being this beat-up, burned-out captain in the Cage to a man who embraces a very terrible future for himself in a moment of selfless sacrifice. I mean, it's a story that's told over almost 60 years of just storytelling in different series. It's really fascinating. And it just shows the thought and care of the showrunners in mining this character for what it's worth, rather than just reimagining him and recasting him. And Pike's moment of choice parallels Christ's moment in the garden so well, this moment of fear and uncertainty and just not wanting to have to face what he's about to face, but ultimately going through with it. And those are parallels that the writers are very conscientious of. Again, the title of the episode is lifted straight from Scripture. And in Strange New Worlds, which takes place after these events, we find Pike really sort of traumatized by the knowledge of what's to come. And it makes for really compelling viewing, because Pike is not a character who is an anti-hero. Pike is the absolute antithesis of an anti-hero. He is one of the few truly good heroes to come along in the 21st century, who is earnest and sincere and doesn't just crack jokes at every turn. This guy is straight out of a classic Western. And that is another parallel that is drawn in the story itself. Strange New Worlds opens with Pike on shore leave in a cabin and riding horses. If this were a classic Western, Pike would be wearing a white hat. So you have this heroic character who is faced with tragedy. And there is the day-to-day struggle of remaining heroic or remaining a good man in spite of a terrible future. The series gets a lot of mileage out of Pike's sacrifice because that sacrifice is inescapable. He knows what's coming. He knows he can't beat it. He looks for ways to beat it. And a lot of the character drama is him coming around to accept it while still finding a way every day to remind himself that the pain is worth it. And it creates this really fascinating dynamic within him as a character, where you have this good man faced with the realization that not all suffering is justified or noble. He's a character who plays fair with everyone, who knows that he's going to get shafted by the most unfair result in the end. He gets blown up in a training exercise, saving the lives of these other cadets. He doesn't even go out like we think a hero should. There's nothing good about what happens to him, and yet he maintains his goodness in day-to-day existence. That is a rare character trait, and the arc of his story is remarkably similar to that of Christ in Scripture. And I'm not saying that you can parse this one-to-one. Their motivations are different. One is divine, the other is not. But it's a much deeper kind of emulation of the Christ story than what we often see. You will often hear the words Christ-like being thrown about regarding characters who just sacrifice themselves, and the word is kind of shallowed out as a result. Batman is often talked about as being Christ-like, but Bruce Wayne is nothing like Christ. He isn't good. He's warped in his head. Pike is Christ-like on a whole other level of morality. Bruce Wayne is damaged and you don't want to be around him. Pike is a guy people want to be around. He's friendly and fair and affable and flawed as a human being, yes, but he's keenly aware of those flaws. And so I think Christians especially can relate to Pike as a character because of day-to-day existence. We know that not all suffering is fair or noble, and yet we are expected as followers of Jesus to be fair and noble and to view our suffering with a similar disposition. And anyone who pretends that being a Christian is easy in this day and age has probably never had an interesting thought in their life. I gave a talk once titled The Agony of Christianity, and it has to do with the pressure to conform to the pattern of a world that postures as being very open and receptive to people of all stripes. This is the great irony of the modern progressive movement. I'm not talking about old school liberalism here. I'm talking about this modern progressive crap we find ourselves in, which says you can have whatever opinion you want and say whatever you want unless I disagree with you, in which case you have to shut up. And you think any remotely conservative Christian wants to play fair with someone like that? Even liberal Christians look at some of the progressive positions and think, even I wouldn't touch that. It's a real trick these days to know you're going to get the short end of the stick on this deal called politics and somehow wake up every day and remain true to Jesus Christ's value system. And not only to remain true to it, but to not allow it to sour your disposition. Now, I'm not saying that Christians have to be these perpetual optimists who are infected with sentimentality and puke rainbows and sunshine and daisies every time they open their mouth. Those people tend to annoy me worse than the ultra-progressives. But as someone who believes that when you die, you don't stay dead, it's hard to be a pessimist 24/7. In fact, Scripture is clear that as a Christian, you have a hope that nobody else has. It doesn't make it easy to get through every day, but it's something that keeps you going. And there are real parallels between Pike's struggle and this struggle. And it's not that I think the writers are making Pike a Christian stand-in. I don't, actually. But by virtue of the Christ-like character arc they have given him, by virtue of the characterization and the narrative being similar to Christ's, the Christian can find very easy inroads into this discussion through this character.
So it seems to me that there is a return of religion in the public sphere, at least in the 21st century, and that has influenced storytelling in Hollywood. And this probably is not something that Roddenberry expected way back when in the 1960s when he created Star Trek. So can you tell us about how Star Trek came around to dealing with religion again in these newer series? Because a lot of religious ideas for sure come through in this particular series.
Oh, it absolutely goes against Roddenberry's views. But we have to remember the man was a product of his time. He was coming up in the early to mid 20th century when people still had a twinkle in their eye regarding the supremacy of science and humanism. Everything was progressive. Things were getting better. Cities were being built. Globalization was coming. And then the world met some guys named Hitler, Stalin, and Mao, and there were lots of dead bodies all in the good name of progress and eugenics, and then people began to rethink some things, paving the way for this very strange phenomenon called postmodernity, which I don't even know if I believe is a real thing, because not even the supposedly postmodern thinkers can agree on how to define it, but I digress. The point is, religion at the end of the 20th century and coming into the 21st, stimulated by globalization, really came surging back into the public sphere. I was always sort of brought up and educated to think that the big villain of the Christian faith today is the godless atheist, the one who rejects the very idea of God, and they're out there waiting in the trees to drop down on the unsuspecting Christian. Look, by and large, atheists are few and far between. Compound that with the fact that I think they're actually pretty easy to deal with from an intellectual standpoint, and atheism really isn't the thing to worry about. If I walked outside right now and stopped 10 random people on the street, I was always taught that most of them would say they don't believe in the notion of a God. That isn't true. I will say that again so any Christian listening to this will get it through their brain. That isn't true. The truth is, I am more likely to encounter an agnostic than an atheist. That is, someone who says, there probably is a divine being out there somewhere, but I don't know anything about it. And who knows which of these world religions, if any of them, are right? Maybe they all have a little bit of truth in them, or are all just different flavors of the same lollipop. That's what you're most likely to encounter. The older folks tend to struggle with that reality, but anybody under 30 gets exactly what I'm talking about. The Enlightenment project failed. The human mind isn't all it's cracked up to be. Scientists make mistakes, but science is still the best indicator of what is true in the world. That's the philosophy of the day, not postmodernism, where we've moved out of modernity and left science behind. That ain't happened, folks. Science is still God these days, but religion is back in vogue. It's just got a whole new vocabulary system, thanks to globalization. Hollywood is really into mysticism and spirituality, for example. Buddhist philosophy is kind of hip and trendy. The New Age movement got a facelift since the 70s, and it's kind of common to meet someone who's into it. Just had a friend who went into the military and bunked with a New Ager. Nietzsche described the Enlightenment project when he said God is dead. Well, the atheist is too. What's left is a watercolor mess that blurs the bold print and makes it hard to tell where one system of belief ends and the other begins. But the only really viable options are the ones that science can reinforce. That's the warp and woof of the day. And you see this reflected in the TV shows and movies that are popular again. We've talked about this in different episodes of the podcast. Star Wars is pretty mystical, and there's no coincidence it's back in style. The superhero movies, kind of like a mythological pantheon. Heroes are as old as storytelling itself. Like Jim Steinman once wrote, it's all coming back. And even Star Trek, which has traditionally been driven by a humanist philosophy, has started to deal with religion some. in the second season of Discovery, there's this episode where there's this planet of these Earth transplants on it, who build this church that's a little bit like the Baha'i religion, which pulls in different strands from different religion and approaches faith like a broad topic. And it sort of acknowledges that faith doesn't go away. Religions might rise and fall over time, but the idea of a higher being and people who search for it really doesn't go away. It is, in fact, timeless. And what's interesting in this episode of Discovery is that Pike is the one who sort of explains this idea. And it's revealed that his father was a science teacher, but also a bit of a theologian who was really interested in religion. And so Pike, Roddenberry's original Enterprise captain, is now positioned as this man who is actually really partial to the idea of religious belief. He actually quotes Shakespeare to one of the other characters in the episode to basically say science doesn't necessarily have all the answers, especially when it comes to discerning motivation. If there is a higher being, a god, then science is not going to be able to tell you about why that being does what it does, even if it does get you closer to maybe understanding what that being is. So there's a real strong irony at work with the character of Pike positioning a character who has a story that is so similar to Christ's and has virtues that are so similar to Christ's as the lead in a Star Trek series, which has traditionally been really anti-religious at different turns. It wrinkles a lot of Roddenberry's original ideas in pretty interesting ways from a straight philosophical standpoint, and it reflects the shift in cultural milieu from the middle of the 20th century to now.
So in this particular series, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, they deal not just with religion, but also with politics. And, you know, in the past, Star Trek has been politically conscious and modern in that sense, I guess. But can you talk about how Strange New Worlds addresses politics today, like where we find ourselves right now in 2022?
Yeah, Star Trek has always been quite progressive, and to its credit in some places, Nichelle Nichols, who passed very recently, the very end of last month, I believe it was, being one of the most well-known examples of that, she really broke ground as an African-American actress with her portrayal of Nyota Uhura in the original series. And I think people tend to forget that Star Trek has always been very political. And a lot of science fiction is political. In some ways, it really is the best genre to explore those ideas. And Strange New Worlds has a couple of episodes that really reflect the politics of today. The very first episode, titled Strange New Worlds, is quite heavily political, dealing with a planet on the brink of civil war, in which it seems like no two sides can get along about anything. Another episode that gets into the sacrifices that societies are willing to make in order to keep their values intact is Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. Both of these episodes deal with political issues in the context of the Star Trek universe, but are only a few degrees removed from political issues today. Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, for example, is an episode that deals with the deaths of children in particular, and it questions the validity of a society that turns a blind eye to these deaths under the justification of maintaining its societal values. And this episode airs less than 3 weeks after the Robb Elementary School shooting in Texas, which saw 19 children killed. And wisely, the show moralizes without being too on the nose, which is something the original series, for example, was not always great at. Strange New Worlds is actually quite nuanced in its take on these issues, in pointing out hypocrisy, especially. There's a really good moment when Pike learns what is happening on this planet in this particular episode, that this child is offered up as a willing sacrifice to this supercomputer that maintains a utopia. And he's really outraged by what he's seeing. This one child is sacrificed to maintain a utopia. But this other character from this utopia throws his own words back in his face, essentially to say, you're being hypocritical by being outraged at our society, which openly acknowledges the harm that comes to one willing participant, when your own society turns a blind eye to the fact that many children suffer daily under your federation to preserve its ideals, when it's a flawed society to begin with. And Pike really doesn't have a good response to that, other than to be haunted and outraged at injustice, period. The narrative doesn't come in with a 2x4 and a good political speech, but instead challenges its characters and by extension the viewer to think critically about positions they hold, or even more to the point, to consider their own disposition toward the suffering of others in the name of politics. That is good science fiction, and that is what good genre fiction does.
So one thing you talk about in your article, your review that you did for us, is allegorical storytelling. And that's a different kind of storytelling than the more self-conscious type. And it's also not the self-aware kind, like, you know, you find in Marvel films, or maybe even not the popular deconstruction approach that's, you know, happening in so many different modern television shows and films. But there's a clear moral center to these stories, and it was very evident in each episode. Now, allegorical storytelling, it's a much older tradition than people might realize. So can you talk a little bit about how Strange New Worlds stands in this particular tradition and how it goes back to the very original Star Trek series? I believe there was an episode, was it the last episode or one of the last episodes, that's kind of mirroring one of the classic Star Trek episodes from the original series?
Yes, the final episode of the season, A Quality of Mercy, directly references one of the more classic Star Trek episodes, and I won't spoil the details of that because it really is just a great episode for anybody who watched that original series to check out. But it does bring back a familiar face. Well, it's the same character, but a different face. He's been recast, but it's really well done and exciting to see. But along the lines of allegorical storytelling, you know, we just talked about how the series addresses some modern politics. Well, the vehicle through which it does that is allegorical storytelling, which, as you noted, is very different from the more modern self-aware, self-conscious approach that a lot of the Marvel films and television shows employ. It's also very different from the deconstruction approach that is so popular these days. It's just a much, much older kind of storytelling. And you probably know this. I mean, your background in literature and things like that, allegorical storytelling is often a controversial topic in literary studies. J.R.R. Tolkien famously hated it. C.S. Lewis wasn't huge on it, but kind of was partial to it and saw real value to it in some ways. A lot of people will say the Chronicles of Narnia is an allegory. Lewis himself would probably disagree with that assertion. But all that to say, it's a very controversial topic. And a lot of this stems just from arguments over what allegory is in general. And in simplest terms, an allegory is just a story or a work of art that uses symbolism to convey a meaning of moral significance. And the reason it gets a lot of controversial attention and debate is because the second you introduce symbolism to something, there's an idea of what you might call layered meaning or hidden meanings. And so interpretation really becomes a battleground with allegorical storytelling because you're always trying to assign meaning to characters, to words, to every little detail of the story. And everything basically has a double meaning when you get to allegory, and that becomes really ripe intellectual battleground. And the episodic nature of Strange New Worlds allows it to do this kind of storytelling quite well. Like you said, just about every episode has this very strong moral center. This is not a show that's going to operate on the graying of good and bad and the deconstructive approach to science fiction and things like that. It's not interested in playing those games. As I said before, when Star Trek is firing on all cylinders, you get these really wonderful allegorical stories that are almost like parables. The Next Generation, for example, has this episode titled The Measure of a Man, which is this really fascinating and philosophical discussion of what it means to be human, done in the context of an android's rights as a machine. You know, that's part of the comedy of CBS rejecting the original pilot for being too cerebral. Star Trek still stands as like the most cerebral television you can really get into and watch. And you get a lot of mileage out of that as a storyteller when you can come in and tell a one-off story with a moral, almost like a fable. And Strange New World stands in this tradition of allegorical storytelling with a couple of these episodes like the ones we just mentioned. And it's going to turn some people off who say, I don't want politics in my stories, or I don't want to be preached at. Well, these kinds of stories aren't going to be your favorites then, if that's your disposition. Because again, like parables, they are designed to make a point. They are designed to be allegorical and to use symbolism and stand-ins for real-world goings-on. And this really is the best genre to do it in, I think. And Star Trek is one of the few series that even dares to do allegory these days, and to even do it well, which is a harder trick to pull off. It's a much older style of storytelling. Allegory can be traced back to classic literature. It was hugely popular in the medieval era. And it can even be found in some places in the poetry of Scripture. And that scares a lot of conservative Christians to suggest that the Bible uses allegory in places when it really shouldn't. That's just keeping poetry in context. Now, I'm not saying that Genesis is allegorical, for example, which is a common assertion. I'm simply saying that when the Bible talks about a vine and branches, it isn't always talking about literal sticks, and your context determines that. And the flip side to that coin is, sometimes in the Bible, a sheep is just a sheep. It's not some hidden meaning about believers and non-believers or Jews and Gentiles every time a sheep is mentioned. Again, context determines it. But all of that to say, allegorical storytelling is a very old style of storytelling, and as far as Star Trek goes, it was employed in both the original series and the Next Generation to some degree. And Strange New Worlds definitely stands in that tradition with its episodic approach to storytelling. And it's very different from a lot of things that are airing on television right now. And for my money, it's the best Star Trek has been in a long time.
Well, finally, on a fun note, I have a couple of rapid fire questions for Cole, and we ask these questions of our authors so that our readers and listeners can get to know them better. And so these are related to Star Trek, of course. So there's been 10 Star Trek television series. Which one is your favorite, and which character is your favorite from all of the series?
That I would have said that was a tough one before Strange New Worlds, but honestly, I really like the series. I've enjoyed watching it more than any of the other Star Trek series, and Pike is hands down my favorite character. I think he's brilliant.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to episode 303 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Cole Burgett, who has written an online exclusive television series review for the journal. His review is called Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, and the New Old-Fashioned Way. And you can read his web exclusive review at our website, equip.org, if you are one of our subscribers. If you do not already subscribe and would like to read the review and get access to this online exclusive, please go to our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.